Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Jana Bala Bhagini Vandhari. Gopi Jana Bala Bhagini Vandhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Banachari. Jamuna Tira Banachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Jana Bala Bhagini Vandhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Banachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Jana Bala Bhagini Vandhari. Gopi Jana Bala Bhagini Vandhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Banachari. Jamuna Tira Banachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Gaura Nitai, Jaya Gaura Nitai, Gaura Nitai, Jaya Gaura Nitai. Prabhupad, 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 Prabhupad. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Paribraja Kacharya Rasta Tara Sadasri Sriman. His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nitya Leela Pravistaram Vishnu Pad Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Kota Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Premse Kohosi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sudvaita Garadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Sisi Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Sri Mathura Dham Ki Jai. Sri Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Sri Sri Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai. Ganga Mai Ki Jai. Jamuna Mai Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakram Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Uta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Visakan Vitam Scha Namaram Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gaudavani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Paschachade Shatarine Daya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Nigama Kalpa Taru Galitam Phalam Sukamukaram Ritadravisam Butam Pivata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam Mahorahora Sikabhuvi Bhavu Kaha Narayanam Namaskritcha Nanam Cheva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudirayat Nashta prayasu abhadresu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama slokir bhaktir bhavati naistiki Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya So we're on Canto 4, Chapter 20, Lord Vishnu's appearance in the sacrificial arena. Text 35 and 36. Devarshi Pitri Gandava Siddha Charana Panagaha Kinara Apsaraso Marchaha Kaga Bhutani Anekashaha Yagneshvara Dhiya Ragya Vag Vitanjali Bhaktitaha Sabhajita Yayu Sarve Vaikuntanugatas Tata Devarshi Pitri Gandharva Siddhacharna Panagaha Kinarapsaro Marchaha Kagabhutanyanekashaha Yagneshwaradhyaragya Vagvitanjali Bhaktitaha Sabhajitayayu Sarve Vaikuntanu Gatastata. Divarshi Pitri Gandharva Siddhacharna Panagaha Kinarapsaraso Martyaha Kagabhutanyane Kashaha Yagneshwaradhyaragya Vagvitanjali Bhaktitaha Sabhajitayayu Sarve Vaikuntanu Gatastata Devarshi Pitri Gandharva Siddhacharna Panagaha Kinarapsaraso Martyaha Kagabhuchanayakshaha Iksnadiyaragya Vagvitanjali Bhaktita Sabhajitayayu Sarve Vaikuntanu Gatastata. Ladies, Devarshi Pitri Gandharva Siddhacharna Panagaha Kinarapsaraso Martya Kagabhutan Yagnekasha Yagneshwaradhyaragya Bhagvitanjali Bhaktitaha Sabhajitayayu Sarve Vaikuntanagutatastata Devarshi Pitri Gandharva Siddhacharana Panagaha Kinarapsaraso Martya Kagabhutanyane Kashaha Yagneshwaradhyaragya Bhagvitanjali Bhaktitaha Sabhajitayayu Sarve Vaikuntanu Gatastata Deva. The demigods, Rishi, the great sages, Pitri, inhabitants of Pitri Loka, Gandharva, inhabitants of Gandharva Loka, Siddha, inhabitants of Siddha Loka, Charana, inhabitants of Charana Loka, Panagaha, inhabitants of the planets where the serpents live, Kinara, inhabitants of the Kinara planets, Apsarasaha, inhabitants of Apsaraloka, Martyaha, inhabitants of the earthly planets, Kagaha, birds, Bhutani, other living entities, Anekashaha, many, Yagya Ishwaradhiya, with the perfect intelligence, of thinking as part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Ragya, by the King. Vak, with sweet words. Vita, wealth. Anjali, with folded hands. Bhakti Taha, in a spirit of devotional service. Sabhajitaha, being properly worshipped. Yayuhu, went. Sarve, all. Vaikuntha, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu. Anugataha, followers. Tataha, from that place. Translation. King Prithu worshipped the demigods, the great sages, the inhabitants of Pitri Loka, the inhabitants of Gandharva Loka, and those of Siddha Loka, Charana Loka, Panaga Loka, Kinara Loka, Apsaro Loka, the earthly planets, and the planets of the birds. He also worshipped many other living entities who presented themselves in the sacrificial arena. With folded hands he worshipped all these, as well as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the personal associates of the Lord, by offering sweet words and as much wealth as possible. After this function, they all went back to their respective abodes, following the footsteps of Lord Vishnu. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. In modern so-called scientific society, the idea is very prevalent that there is no life on other planets, but that only on this earth do living entities with intelligence and scientific knowledge exist. The Vedic literatures, however, do not accept this foolish theory. The followers of Vedic wisdom are fully aware of various planets inhabited by varieties of living entities such as the demigods, the sages, the pitas, the gandharvas, the panagas, the kinaras, the charanas, the siddhas, and the apsaras. The Vedas give information that in all planets, not only within this material sky, but also in the spiritual sky, there are varieties of living entities. Although all these living entities are of one spiritual nature, in quality the same as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they have varieties of bodies due to the embodiment of the spirit soul by the eight material elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, sky, mind, intelligence, and false ego. In the spiritual world, however, there is no such distinction between the body and the embodied. In the material world, distinctive features are manifested in different types of bodies in the various planets. We have full information from the Vedic literature that in each and every planet, both material and spiritual, there are living entities of varied intelligence. The earth is one of the planets of the Bhuloka planetary system. There are six planetary systems above Bhuloka and seven planetary systems below it. Therefore, the entire universe is known as Chaturdasha Bhuvan, indicating that it has 14 different planetary systems. Beyond the planetary systems in the material sky, there is another sky which is known as Paravyoma, or the spiritual sky, where there are spiritual planets. The inhabitants of those planets engage in varieties of loving service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which include different rasas, or relationships, known as Dasya Ras, Sakya Ras, Vatsalya Ras, Madhurya Ras, and above all, Parakya Ras. This Parakya Ras, or paramour love, is prevalent in Krishna Loka, where Lord Krishna lives. This planet is also called Goloka Vrindavan. And although Lord Krishna lives there perpetually, he also expands himself in millions and trillions of forms. In one of such forms, he appears on this material planet in a particular place known as Vrindavan Dham, where he displays his original pastimes of Goloka Vrindavan Dham in the spiritual sky in order to attract the conditioned souls back home, back to Godhead. All right, I won't read the verse. So, this is a very nice description, precise and concise, of the material universe that we're living in, that it's highly populated. Everywhere there are living entities, just like on this one planet. Everywhere, in any condition, in the air, on the earth, in the earth, under the water, everywhere there are living beings. And there's a vast variety, millions, millions and millions, 8,400,000 species are there, according to the Vedic literature. Modern scientists, they're also attempting to count how many different varieties of living beings there are, because they have their own system for identifying various species. But they report regularly that every day some hundreds or even thousands of new species, what they think are new species, or newly discovered species. You can't say a new species because the species are already there. There's nothing new. There's only the discovery of them that is new. So newly discovered, some hundreds or even thousands of species are being listed every day or every week. This is still going on. I was just reading the other day that there's some company, they're trying to make a store of all the varieties of seeds that there are on the planet. So they've been gathering up for many years what they identify as different varieties of grasses and different kinds of plants and trees and this and that. So just in that one area or species, yeah, just the plants and trees, etc., they've gathered up some millions of different kinds of seeds, what they think are different kinds of seeds, and they say there could be billions out there, for what we know. It will be another 20 years at least, they say, before they get anywhere near compiling or preserving, you know, all the varieties of seeds that there are. And that's just, you know, the plants and trees. And what to speak about all the other varieties of life. So there's vast, vast variety everywhere we look. And if we look inside our own bodies, we'll find so many varieties of living beings. We are the predominant living being of this particular body at this particular time. Just like the other day, we were walking along the beach and with Srila Prabhupada, and there was a dead body lying on the beach. Some animal, dog or pig or something. It was just lying there. The carcass was there. So that living being that was occupying that body is gone. But that same body is still being occupied by many hundreds and thousands of other living beings. They have their own purpose, and they have their own functions. So that body is a kind of host to many, many varieties of life. Everybody knows this. In medical science, everybody knows that there's so many varieties of life within any particular kind of body. So in this material universe, it's just a big body. And within this gigantic body of the universe, there is a predominating living being. And that predominating living being is accompanied by vast varieties of other living beings. And all of those living beings have their particular kinds of functions and intelligence and activities. So everything is going on. So here we see that when that predominant living being wants to show himself and expose himself to all the other living beings, then at least all the pious ones who were willing to recognize him and who were willing to bow down before him, who were willing to offer their obeisances to him, all those living beings, wherever that supreme living being appears, they all come. It's not that he's by himself or he's living in some void. Yeah, that somehow or another the ultimate situation of life is nothingness. There are no voids. Everything is full of life. And wherever the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, wherever he goes, wherever he appears, vast quantities of living beings of all kinds of varieties, they come and they offer their respectful obeisances to that Supreme Lord. Because they know that their existence is entirely dependent upon him. If he withdraws, then this vast body of the material universe ceases to function. And that also happens. Just as a living being comes into a particular kind of body and remains there for some time, and there's so many developments that go on, different stages of development, and then finally at another certain time that living being withdraws, and then there's what we call death. That body is vacated by the predominant living being. Then the body starts to break down and it merges back into the elements, the various elements that surround us. So in the same way, every universe, it comes out at a certain period and it grows and it goes through stages of development, and it is sustained by a singular predominant living being, the Personality of Godhead. And after some time, then he withdraws and that universal body, it begins to collapse and it begins to cease to function, and everything breaks down and everything goes back into the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's withdrawn. And all the living beings that were active, they are put into a kind of state of suspended animation within the body of the Lord. Just like a child within the womb. In the beginning stages, when the wife is impregnated by the husband, the life is there because immediately there's development. So many cells are there. One cell, then it becomes two, then it becomes four, then it becomes eight, then it becomes 16, and in this way it very rapidly develops. So on what basis is that development taking place? The basis is that there's a living force there that is sustaining the unification or the development of those individual cells and enabling them to come together as a group. And then they're sustained and then they, what we call, grow. So after some period of time, when there's been sufficient growth and some distinguishing features are apparent, then the symptoms of the consciousness of that predominating living being within that body become apparent also. So at a certain stage, although it's dormant in the very beginning, still by its symptoms it can be understood. Here is a living being. And at a certain point, the consciousness, the individuality, the expression of personality begins to become apparent as the body develops and can accommodate it. So after 7 months, when the body is fully formed, then that living being begins to become fully conscious. It begins, its functions begin, it can hear. It begins to move. And after 9 months, out it comes to live, to begin its life of independence. Not quite, it needs more nurturing. But still now it no longer requires to develop within the protective womb of its mother. It can come out and it begins to grow. And as it grows, the consciousness of that living being expands. He takes up his activities, his senses develop and enable him to express his consciousness in so many different ways. So this is a microcosm, and the universe is a macrocosm. The same business is going on. The universe has come out from the body or the pores of Lord Mahavishnu. They're entered into by Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And in this way, then, the development of the universe begins to take place. It grows, it expands. All the elements that are there compacted. Actually, they're always there, separate, individual kinds of elements. But in the beginning stage, they appear to be all merged in one. This is pradana. But then with the influence of time and the mixing of the three modes of material nature, then the variety begins to come out. And so then you get this earth, water, fire, sky, intelligence, mind, false ego, all these different distinguishing features of material nature begin to become manifest. All on the basis of the presence of a living being, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then many, many trillions and billions of other living beings who accompany the Lord within the manifestation of that particular universe. And then everything begins to manifest. It becomes apparent. And then you get all this fantastic variety, almost endless variety. But it's all on the basis of life. Without there being a living being, at the very start, the material elements cannot develop. They remain inert. This is common sense. We can see it. We've given the example of conception. So if no living entity is injected into the womb of the mother, there's no conception. The ingredients are there. Yeah, the sperm of the father, the egg of the mother. But nothing happens from the combination if there's no living being within it. It's a failure. The conception is a failure. But if there is a living being, then immediately the combination of the secretions of the father and the mother, there's some activity. Immediately there's some development. And you just leave it long enough, a little bit of time, and then you'll see that living being will come out. Yeah, alive and kicking, as they say, alive and screaming. This is easy to observe. So in the entire universe, the same business is going on. There are living beings everywhere. And just as we see on this planet, there's so many varieties how the living beings manifest their activities within the modes of material nature. Some of them are born from seeds. Yeah, a little tiny seed. Some ingredient is there. You put it in the ground, you mix it with a little water and some elements from the earth, and then immediately that body begins to grow. It sprouts, it grows up, it comes up above the earth. You see how amazing it is that first of all it's below the earth, there's no light, yeah, but some other ingredients are there. It absorbs them, it utilizes them, it expands on the basis of them. Then it comes up, the shoot comes up above the earth. And then another element, the sunlight, becomes very, very powerful in its development, photosynthesis. And then the whole thing begins to manifest. First as a small plant, then it comes to a bush, then it becomes a tree. And that tree can be any size. Just like in California, I went one time to see the redwood forest. There are trees over 250 feet high. Massive. Yeah, there's some roots growing and you can drive a motor car underneath the roots of the tree. It's so big. It looks very, you know, vast. And yet there's other tiny little plants, they don't grow more than half an inch. So such a variety just in that one kind of species. And then if we look at all the other species, different species that come from eggs. How amazing is an egg? Some eggs, they don't have any shells. Tadpoles and frog spawn and these kinds of things. They're eggs, but they don't have any hard shell. Yeah, within that little glutinous mass appears just like a little glob of jelly. But some living being is there, and as it grows, it begins to form a body and a tail, and then it gets legs, and then gradually the glutinous mass disappears and it pops out as a little frog. And away it swims to begin its life so it can be eaten by the snakes. But that's one kind of egg. But there are many kinds of eggs. There's other kinds of eggs. They have a hard shell around them. And somehow or another, the living being within that hard shell, all the ingredients are there for his body to fully develop. And at a certain stage, he gets big enough that he can break that shell from the inside and smash his way out, and then he begins his life. Oh, there are hundreds and thousands and millions of varieties that we can give. And what to speak about the complexities, you know, of development within the womb. You know, different kinds of wombs are there, animals also, and human beings. And how fantastic it is how all that incredible ingredients come together and work cohesively and form the body of a human being or some other living entity. It's amazing. It's inconceivable. Actually, despite all the attempts of modern science, they still can't understand how it's going on. What makes that particular combination grow and come to life? And what's the difference between a living body and a dead body? When Srila Prabhupada went to MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, supposed to be one of the most advanced scientific institutions in the world, he asked them this question. Prabhupada was very bold. He went right into the heart of the most so-called intelligent people on the planet, and he asked them, what is the difference between a living body and a dead body? Why is one body alive and then why does it become dead? You tell me. And nobody could answer. Nobody knows what is life, how it comes about, where it's coming from, where it's going to. Nobody can say. There's a documentary that came out last year or the year before, very interesting, called Expelled. It's by this gentleman called Ben Stein. So he was protesting that in the schools they don't allow any talk about anything other than chemical evolution. Although chemical evolution has never been proved, and it never will be proved because it's actually not true. But this is all they'll allow to be taught in the schools, even though there's so many loopholes, so many flaws in the philosophy of it, and the explanation of it, so-called scientific explanation. But they won't allow anything else to be presented as an alternative as to what life is. So in the last few years, this so-called intelligent design movement has begun within the ranks of scientists themselves, where some scientists became fed up with the bluffing of Darwinism. This year is the 150th anniversary, I think, of Darwin's birth or something. So there's a group of scientists that have finally become fed up with all the bluffing that goes on in the name of science, in the name of evolution, because it's never been proved. But by propaganda only, people have been brainwashed into thinking that there is such a thing as chemical evolution and life coming from matter. So these fellows, of course, they have to preserve their jobs. They can't come out directly and say, no, life is there at the beginning and matter develops on the basis of life, not that life develops on the basis of matter. Because if they say that, then they have to say that there's a supreme life, that there's an original life, and everything develops from that. So that means saying, there's a God. No, you can't speak about God. So what they've done is they say, well, from our investigation, life is so complex it cannot be explained by chemical evolution. There must be some other explanation. that there's something else that's going on. When we look down into the minutest particles of matter, we see that everything is very precise, very complex. And it's so complex, in fact, that it cannot be anything other than a design. When you design something, you take many elements and then you work out how to fit them all together. So let's say you make a machine. So you can't make your machine unless you have an original design. So you put you work out your design, then you manufacture your parts, then all the parts have to be there together at the beginning before so that that machinery will work. And if any part is missing, it may not work. Everybody knows this. So they've looked into the human cell. Now, when Darwin proposed his foolish theory of evolution, origin of species, at that time, people thought that the human cell was a very simple, like glob of jelly, that's all. That it had no characteristics. Within that cell, nothing was practically going on. But somehow or another, those cells would combine together and develop. So this was their idea. But nowadays, if you ask, what is a human cell? It can hardly be described in volumes of books. It's so complex. One professor was asked, can you compare Darwin's understanding of a cell and the modern understanding of a cell? So he said, it's like a modern cell would be like a cosmos, a whole cosmos, compared to what Darwin was conceiving. It's so incredibly complex. So this is just one small cell. So it's so complex and it has so many component parts. And if you don't have them all together at the same time, at the very beginning, it doesn't work. So how it can evolve? Evolution means that there's some, gradual development in different stages of matter. But when you need a vast number of component parts that all have to be perfectly formed, and then they all have to perfectly integrate at the very beginning for that body to begin its work, then how you can say that it's evolved? It's not possible. So they all know this, even the mathematicians. They won't touch evolutionary theory because they know it can't be proved by mathematics. It's bogus. But because that is the predominating educational system at the moment, nobody dare say anything against it. So these scientists, they finally decided enough is enough. We have to admit the complexity of life is such it cannot be explained by chemical evolution. There must be some other explanation. So what is the alternative? The alternative is that it must have been designed. If it didn't come about by chance, it must have come about by thought, by deliberation. And that means intelligence, therefore intelligent design. A design is a product of intelligence. Now, they won't go any further than that. Yeah? They won't go any further than that. They just say, have a look and see what you think. But we know, anybody with intelligence knows that intelligence is the symptom of life. Life is personal. Intelligence is the symptom, it is the thought form of a living being, a personality. You can't have life without personality. It's not possible. Is it possible? You must have, ultimately, a person who thinks and feels and wills, who conceives of something and then experiences it and then puts it into effect, thinking, feeling, and willing. So that's what we've got with this vast universe. It is not a barren wasteland. devoid of life. It's filled with life, just like this one planet is filled with life in different conditions. Every planet, every nook and cranny of the universe, it has its life. It has its purpose. Because, of course, as soon as you speak about life, then you speak about purpose. If you speak about intelligence, you speak about deliberation. For what? There is a purpose. So immediately you recognize that life is different from matter. You come out of this morass of ignorance, of not knowing where the universe has come from, not knowing what the purpose of the universe is, not knowing where the living beings have come from, why they're here in these bodies, where they're going when they leave these bodies. All that ignorance is removed. So the Bhagavatam, this is Rajavidya. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Rajavidya Rajaguyam. This is the topmost knowledge. In this Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita, you'll find real knowledge. Not bluff, but reality. What life actually is. What is the supreme life? What is this material universe? What is that element called time that rules over everything in this material world? And what actions should be performed? These are the five branches of real education. To know what is God, what is the living being, what is material nature, what is time, and what action should be performed. And when you know that, you know everything. You know sufficient to know what is your real purpose and what your ultimate destination ought to be. That we are, in fact, in movement. That we're moving from one place to another constantly. Nobody remains where they are. Everybody is moving. It's a fact. Now, where are we moving to? Why are we moving? What is the nature of movement? These are the questions that intelligent people should be asking. And here the answer is given. Movement is rasa. It's very interesting. Prabhupada's giving these five relationships. Movement is relationship. If there's no movement, there's no relationship. Therefore, Prabhupada has not actually included in the description these five rasas, Santarasa. Of course, Santarasa, there's something going on, but it's not very active. But Prabhupada's saying here that the real business is rasa. And rasa is dependent, or is the symptom of rasa, is movement. Yeah, dasyaras. There's some service going on, some exchange. Sakyaras, vatsalyaras, madhuryaras, and parakiyaras. This is the nature of the living being with or in relationship to the Supreme Living Being. There's rasa going on. There's movement. There's exchange. There's affection and love. These are the symptoms of life. If you don't have any love, you're a dead stone. If you have no love, then what have you got? Nothing. As they say, I have no love, I may as well be dead. You are dead if you have no love. So the ultimate goal in life is to realize what real love is. And to move into that relationship that sustains that love without any hindrance or interruption. Without any confinement. Unlimited. Ahaituki apratiyata. This is the real purpose in life. This is Bhagavad Dharma. And what we see here is a description of varieties of life interacting with the Supreme Life. Lord Vishnu comes, every other living being that's not in ignorance, that's not in denial of their very selves, that admit that, yes, I'm a living being, I'm alive, I have a purpose, yeah, I have some rasa. They're all there worshipping that Supreme Lord and getting an exchange with them. And Prithu Maharaj, as an intelligent living being, he's offering his obeisances to all of them because they're actually intelligent. So this is the message of the Bhagavatam. It's to bring us back to life, and not to kill us and convince us that we're worthless, nothingness, Yeah, that there's some kind of void is the ultimate destination, whether it be the void of just dying and becoming nothing, or the void of the foolish Mayavadi materialists who say that, yes, we're a soul, we're not this body, but when we leave this material world, again, we become nothing, the same destination. No, no voids. Everything is life. And here, that description of life is given very succinctly. So we have to finish. We're supposed to finish at 8:45. Does anybody have any quick questions or comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Thanks a lot for giving such a nice, wonderful class and giving such a fantastic explanation about the living entities position. So I would like to ask one question. So can you explain about the 14 planetary systems, how the living entities are obtaining their positions?
We explain about the 14 planetary systems?
Yes,
you can read the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. That will give you some idea of some of the levels in the universe. There's a very wonderful book. It describes the journey, that movement of Gopikumar, a sample living being. He's initially in ignorance, and then he becomes educated, what is the universe, and then ultimately what is even beyond the universe. So that journey of the soul, that is explained in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. But what we can say is that there's a gradual development of consciousness, and according to the development of consciousness, then the conditions that those living beings live in is suitable for their sustenance. In other words, if you want to believe that there is no life, that life is just a product of matter, then in your next life you'll become a stone. Prabhupada said that. There are stones also that grow. They're also a living form. So, yes, you don't want to be alive. You don't want to exhibit your intelligence in different ways. You want to become nothing. But you can't actually, because you're a spirit soul and the soul is eternal. So it cannot be destroyed. But its activities can be curtailed to the point where it appears like it has no life. So it becomes a stone. Or a little bit up from that, you can become a tree. Yeah, then you just have to stand there. Yeah. Oh, that's different. So, according to the development of consciousness, there are various planets, and there's different amenities that are offered to those living beings in response to their developed consciousness. Yeah. So, on this planet, it's very important because we have a chance, instead of gradually going up, developing like that, automatic in one sense, just like the living beings on the lower levels, the soul is automatically going up from one species to another. But at the human form, then you have a chance, you can dispense with that whole process and immediately restore yourself back to your original full spiritual form. Then there's no need for going around the universe anymore. There's no need to go up and worry about what's going on the 6 higher planetary systems or the 7 lower planetary systems. Who cares? It's all the same. Abrahma Bhuvanal Loka Punar Avatino Arjuna. Krishna tells Arjuna very plainly, even if you get to the highest planet, it's the same business is going on. Birth, death, disease and old age. That's all. Even Lord Brahma is born and has to die. So no point in hanging around in the universe. Don't be interested in what's going on in the material universe, but become interested in what is going on in that paravyoma, that superior existence, which is Satchidananda, eternal, full of awareness, and therefore full of bliss. The more aware we become of ourselves, the more blissful that we become. The less aware we are of ourselves, the more miserable we become. Therefore, you'll see all these so-called philosophers, Sartre and Voltaire, all these kinds of people, their whole idea was that ultimately life has no meaning, we as living beings have no value, and then they kill themselves. And actually, material scientists are doing that. They're killing everybody. And we see that both existentially and even, you know, externally. What has science ever been good at? Making big bombs so that they can kill more people. They haven't invented anything that can keep you alive. They've invented lots of things that can blow you to smithereens. Of course, you can't kill the soul, that's another thing. But that is from their faulty thinking. If you look back at the history of mankind, you'll see this material science was not, nobody had any interest in it. Digging up the earth, strip mining, coal mining, oil mining, gold mining, this, that, the other, you know, destroying the very planet that they're living on. For what? For some, you know, cheap sense gratification, a sense of so-called ownership and wealth? No. For many millions of years, people were intelligent enough to know that they were part of a living system. They, as living beings, are part of a bigger living system, and their whole purpose was to live in harmony with that. So whatever they needed for their sustenance, they were getting from material nature. You don't have to abuse her, you don't have to violate her. But as soon as you get this mentality that you're superior to nature, or that we're evolved, we're intelligent, we're the most intelligent anybody's ever been in the whole universe by our 150 years of scientific investigation, now we become more than, you know, a universe of billions of years of age. Oh, now we can do whatever we like. And what is the end result? They're destroying everything. They're killing, that's all. And they're killing themselves. They're killing the spirit of enjoyment. So we shouldn't be misled by the foolish material scientists. Life is everywhere. Life is active. Life is bliss. That's life. All right?
Thank you.
So I think it's late now. We should finish. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.